Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC Kansas City, and I can't lie, it didn't disappoint me. You know, there were some people that felt a little disappointed by this. I think the good outweighed the bad for this event. Now, I will say there were some parts where it dragged. The main event was certainly not what we anticipated, but nonetheless, good overall. We're going to go through every single matchup and discuss and give our thoughts on who could be next for all of the fighters. We did go 11-3 on predictions, which is pretty good for us, including 5-1 on the main card. I mean, come on. Come on, that's like prime picking right there for me in terms of UFC predictions. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, we're 115-56 on the year, so we are climbing up there in our overall picks record for the year. But other than that, we've got some new fights to talk about. It's pretty run in the mill, guys, and we're going to get into the week with this episode, and I'm excited for it. Let's kick some butt this week, and let me give you your UFC rundown. So first off, new UFC fights live on the podcast last time out. If you were listening to our predictions episode, it was announced UFC 318 in New Orleans, Louisiana, July 19th. Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier in the main event for the BMF title bout. That was announced live on the podcast, and we broke it. It was so fun to discuss that. Like, and then he popped up my screen, and I was like, oh my gosh, can you believe this right now? But I'm super happy. We're going to Louisiana for the first time in, oh, goodness knows how long. Dustin Poirier's retirement fight is against Max Holloway. And fun fact, Dustin Poirier was actually the man who Max Holloway faced in his UFC debut. How fitting that Max Holloway is the man that Dustin Poirier fights when he retires. I mean, it's just crazy how that stuff works out. But Max Holloway, currently ranked number 4 in the lightweight division. Poirier is ranked number 5. This is more so of a fight for Max Holloway, as opposed to anything that he could move upwards in the rankings and get a title shot. As for Dustin Poirier, he's just trying to go out on a win. And honestly, I think I'm going to pick Dustin. His last few fights have had me really sold on him. There's just something about Dustin Poirier that just gets me fired up. I can't lie. And as for Max Holloway, I mean, talk about action-packed nonstop, and he's looking to get back after losing to Ito Piura. You know, I'll say Dustin Poirier is coming off that Islam Makhachev loss. He's coming out of that looking way better than Max Holloway is after losing to Ito Piura. But unfortunately, their last two fights were against two of the best fighters in the UFC right now, and plus, these are two legends of the game. Super excited for that. I'm also very curious to see what they build this card around, since it is in Louisiana. I saw some people posing that you do maybe some major lightweight fights on this card as well. You know, lightweight division is pretty tumultuous right now. What are you going to do with Armin Tsarukyan, Paddy Pimblett, Dan Hooker, Charles Oliveira, Islam Makhachev? So maybe you pair together Dan Hooker versus Armin Tsarukyan. You do something along those lines, or you do Paddy Pimblett, Justin Gaethje. I don't know, but also Brendan Allen is a name in the middleweight division. Him and Marvin Vettori have some beef. There's a perfect fight in the middleweight division. I mean, lots of options right there. The other big fight that we had announced, this one for UFC Atlanta, going down June 14th, UFC Atlanta, Georgia. The main event, the number 4 ranked welterweight, Kamaru Usman, takes on the number 6 ranked Joaquin Buckley. I love this matchup. I really love this matchup, and I think it's winnable for both of these guys. Now, for Kamaru, this is his first fight since October 2023. If I'm not mistaken, we're going to talk about this, obviously, when it gets closer to this event. This may be the only fight he's had booked in this time span. I don't know if that's actually accurate, but I swear this dude has had no fights booked. He's just been on the sidelines. We're going to have to see how he is. We are really going to have to see how he is, because he's 37. He's 37. He turns 37 on May 11th. So when he's stepping in that octagon, he'll be 37. So the prime Usman you used to love and watch is just not here anymore. And as for Joaquin Buckley, he's coming in young gun, 31 years old. He's on the run of a lifetime, 11-4 in the UFC, undefeated at welterweight. This is going to be a show-stopping matchup. You know, I think it all comes down to, we saw Joaquin Buckley be able to stop Colby Covington's takedowns and beat him up in the striking. That's the same thing here. You have to stuff the takedowns of Usman and beat him in the striking. And plus, Usman didn't do too bad of a job against Hamzat Chimaev when they fought. By the way, short notice, up in weight. So we'll see if Usman is more settled into his role here at welterweight. I'm going to be honest, I'm probably going to pick Joaquin Buckley just because I think it would be a best for business decision to have Buckley break into the top 4, top 5. But in terms of other matchups, I mean, we're going to talk about some other welterweight matchups. It's going to be interesting matchmaking going down the stretch. But with this fight getting made, we can kind of narrow down the numbers here where you have Shavkat and Sean Brady, where they're waiting in the wings. Both of them deserve a title shot. I hate to say it, I think you do Shavkat Sean Brady, the winner fights the winner of Bilal Muhammad and JDM. And apparently, if Jack Del Maddalena wins, they're going to do him versus Islam Makhachev in a Islam Makhachev trying to win the second belt in the UFC. So I'm going to be honest, I would love to see Jack Del Maddalena win, but I also don't want to see Islam Makhachev move up. There are fights for him to have at lightweight, so probably get picked Bilal for that one. We'll have to see, but other than that, guys, no other new fights. No other new fights, really. I've been kind of waiting for the UFC to drop some big news. You know, their big ones have kind of been the UFC Atlanta main event and the UFC 318 main event. So those are fantastic fights right there. We'll have to see what else comes of this. But yeah, that's all your new UFC news you need to be aware of. And with that, I say we just get right on into our UFC Kansas City recap. No need to deny it any longer because we had a lot of action. And it started from the get-go. Going to the prelims, I mean, Jocelyn Edwards, Chelsea Chandler. You know, it's women's bantamweight. Women's bantamweight, no one expects much out of that, all right? And I'm not trying to be mean. Like, I truly am not trying to be mean, but no one expects a lot out of this division. And so when you come out, you kick off the card, and Jocelyn Edwards gets a knockout. I mean, her sixth career knockout for her 10th career finish. Fantastic stuff. That is how you kick off a card. That is how you kick off a card. I mean, fight lasted 2.5 minutes. Jocelyn had a takedown. Chelsea got back up. And Edwards was just laying into Chandler, just going at her. Boom, boom, shot after shot after shot. Chandler was leaning up and down. She was about to go down. Ref steps in. That's it. Jocelyn Edwards, 2-fight winning streak now. Both of them finishes. I mean, fantastic work. Fantastic work. What more can you ask for? And she's going to be ranked number 14 come Tuesday with the rankings update. I absolutely love to see it. This was domination from her. Fantastic. As for Chelsea Chandler, 2 straight losses. She's 1-3 in her last 4. I would not be mad if we cut her, but there's always women you can break in. So maybe some unranked women's bantamweight that we don't know of. You know, Melissa Mullins is always right there in the bottom of the rankings. But as for Jocelyn Edwards, she's got a big finish. Who's next for her? I don't know. Maybe Yana Santos, maybe Carol Rosa, maybe Myra Bueno Silva. I think there's a lot of options that we can do with Jocelyn Edwards, but she got the card kicked off with a bang, and we correctly predicted it. Can't beat that. So Jocelyn Edwards, she'll improve her MMA record to 15-6. Chelsea Chandler will fall to 6-4. And if they cut her, they keep her, I will not be surprised either way because she didn't really offer much in this matchup. Moving on to our featherweight matchup. And oh, this one hurt. This one hurt. Now, Roberto Romero wasn't looking the best in round number 1, but nonetheless was still staying in it. But Timmy Twilight Kuamba truly put Roberto Romero's lights out. Hits him with a flying switch kick knee, like a jumping knee. Clips him, lands some follow-up punches. I mean, Roberto Romero was out on the ground with that kick on. Like, lights on, nobody home, and great win. Great win for Tommy Kuamba. Gets the round 2 TKO. I can't even hate on him, man. I truly can't hate on him. Good for Timmy. Truly good for Timmy. And there's a guy who's coming in the UFC 0-2, 2 lackluster decisions. No real idea what we're supposed to do with him. And he goes out. He gets a finish. Excellent work for Tommy Kuamba. And Timmy, this will be his 5th career knockout. 5th career knockout, he'll improve to 8-5. Or actually, no, that was Roberto Romero falls to 8-5. Timmy Kuamba improves to 9-3. A much needed win to stay relevant in the men's featherweight division. Even not to say relevant, just to stay in the men's featherweight division, if I'm gonna be honest, just to stay in this division. Roberto, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, save it strike wise, 35-33. He was hanging with them. And even round 1, landed 22-9. The power was just kind of more with Timmy Kuamba. So, good win for Timmy. He'll stay. We're going to bring up a couple featherweights also on this card where I think maybe you could see a matchup there, but I don't really know. Roberto Romero, I hope they bring him back for one more go, but the David Onama fight that he had in November looked much better than he did in this one. So we'll see what happens for both these guys, but Timmy's for sure staying. Roberto, they might keep him on for one more opportunity at best. I'm going to say one more opportunity at best. But after that, we were back on our game with our predictions. Women's strawweight division, Jacqueline Amorim is slowly becoming my new favorite woman's strawweight. I mean, utter just annihilation. The skill discrepancy between her and Poliana Viana was so apparent, just so evident. It was fantastic. She's a minus 800 favorite for a reason. She keeps her 100% finish rate intact. All right, 8 career subs now. 8 career subs. Jacqueline Amorim improves to 10-1. And honestly, Alex Pereira, you might have fumbled this girl. You might have fumbled her. 4-fight win streak now. All of them finishes. And this fight, This fight lasted 6 minutes and 49 seconds. 6 minutes and 34 seconds of it, Jacqueline Warren was in control on only 2 takedowns. That's right. Poliana Viana doesn't even land a significant strike in this fight. Jacqueline held her down for 4 minutes and 54 seconds in round 1 and 1 minute and 40 seconds of the minute and 49 seconds that took place in round number 2. Just domination. Utter domination for Jacqueline Warren. Now, as for Poliana Viana, this is actually the 4th time she's been finished in her career. And as for her UFC run, this is where it'll come to an end. 3 straight losses, finished in all of them. She's 13-8, hasn't won since 2022. Yeah, that'll do it. Bye-bye to Poliana Viana. But Jacqueline Warren, she's here to play. And people are already bringing up ranked opposition names. Look, I love it. Tisha Pennington's right down there. Luiana Pinheiro, Angela Hill. Those are names right there I want to see her take on next. If not, take their spot in the rankings. Because Jacqueline Warren has some amazing grappling. She's got the looks. She's got the swagger. Let me see her succeed in the UFC. Following that, holy crap. Holy cow, this man throughout the whole week was saying, I'm coming in the UFC, I'm making a statement, I need the 50K. Malcolm Wellmaker versus Cameron Sayman. And, you know, he's working a welding job, he's working some labor job, he's like, if I can get a performance bonus, I can not go into work Monday, I can go in, tell them I'm quitting, I'm done, I can do MMA full time. And what does Malcolm Wellmaker go out there and do but puts out Cameron Sayman's life in just under by 1 second, 2 minutes? Holy cow, what a knockout. What a knockout from Cameron Wellmaker. And Malcolm Wellmaker. Gosh, I'm getting their names mixed up. Malcolm Wellmaker knocking out Cameron Sayman. I mean, beautiful. Just beautiful. And he spoke it into existence. He's 9-0 now, and I never really doubted. I kind of forgot about the undefeated streak here in 2025 where everyone with their O is losing it. But Malcolm Wellmaker, absolutely not. Put out his guy in the Contender Series and just put out Cameron Sayman's lights cold. Fam, phenomenal. Simply phenomenal. The 5th knockout of his career, 7th career finish. I mean, you know what? He was the favorite for a reason, and he should remain the favorite. 30 years old, and he just seems young. He has a young spirit, young fighting style. I think he's poised for some big things here in the UFC. And I actually think I'm going to matchmake him with someone from the next fight we're going to talk about. But for Cameron Sayman, I feel really bad. I feel really bad. This kid was 9-0 and just runs into Christian Rodriguez, the prospect killer, has to take on a prime Peyton Talbot, and then just his chin was not prepared. His chin had taken too much damage from the Peyton fight for someone with the power of Malcolm Wellmaker. So for Cameron Sayman, I hope they give him one more shot. There's always going to be bantamweights coming through the rotation, coming through the mix. But for right now, I don't really know. And mind you, Sayman's only 24. Maybe 3 to 4 years on the independent scene wouldn't hurt him. Maybe getting that confidence back up. Maybe taking that record from 9-3 to 15-3. You know, picking up 6 good dominant wins over people he's clearly better than. But he just might have came in here a little green into the UFC despite getting some wins. And when you run into guys like Malcolm Wellmaker, your light's going to get put out. So yes, he did get the 50K performance bonus. Love that for him. And bantamweight, you watch out for this guy. Make sure to also watch out for the guy in our next matchup. I mean, you already knew about him. But Damon Blackshear and Alatenge. And Alatenge in this one just outclassed by Damon Blackshear. No shocker. No shocker if you ask me. I think Alatenge would even be a good opponent next for Malcolm Wellmaker, if I'm going to be honest. But Damon Blackshear, we know he can probably hang with some top 15ers. I mean, don't be put off by his knockout loss to Montel Jackson. That just speaks to how good Montel Jackson is. But to no one's surprise here, Damon Blackshear gets the job done. He was the favorite for a reason. Boring decision, though. You know, I don't want to say this murdered the momentum, but certainly when you have finish, and then you run into this, it is kind of dull. Totals from the fight, 125 significant strikes to 61 in favor of Damon Blackshear. Alatenge attempted 1 takedown that failed, but throughout the whole fight, I mean, 37-11, outstrikes Alatenge in round 1. Round 2, Blackshear, 40-25. Round 3, Blackshear, 48-25. Just outstruck him. Every single round, Damon Blackshear getting it done. 3-fight win streak now. I would love to see him in the rankings. I just don't know who. I know Montel Jackson has a fight coming up with Daniel Marcos. So maybe if Daniel Marcos loses that, but Joseph Amanzahabi taking on Jose Aldo, maybe if Amanzahabi loses that, Marcus McGee could be a potential fight next. Kyler Phillips is always going to be someone you can suggest. So it's up to me. I may be going with Kyler Phillips there, but Damon Blackshear, 3-fight winning streak, 3 good wins. I think he deserves a ranked spot. And as for Alatenge, he's going to be taking on guys like Malcolm Wellmaker who are coming off of big wins and who are going to need someone to really pick them up. So Tamon Blackshear, 17-7 now in his MMA career. Alatenge is now 17-10. So good stuff for Tamon Blackshear. I swear I always picked him on when he fights, so I wasn't too surprised. I'll tell you what else I wasn't surprised about. Chris Gutierrez and John Castaneda going all three rounds, and it being a split decision, and going to Chris Gutierrez. Now, mind you, this is pretty, evident for Chris Gutierrez. I'm glad I switched on our prediction show from Chris to where I was kind of thinking John Castaneda. But just nothing exciting. Nothing exciting in this one. The split decision, you know, I'll say probably came from just a close round three for John where he landed a takedown. But round one, quite honestly, nothing happened. 9 significant strikes to 6 in favor of Chris. Chris landed a knockdown on one of those. A lot of clinch work against the cage for John Castaneda. Round two comes around. Chris outstrikes him 29-23, very back and forth. And then round three, John Castaneda, more significant strikes, 12-8, landed a takedown, almost 3 minutes of control time. So John probably took round three. It was a 29-28 in my book for Chris Gutierrez. But just, you know, when we're coming off of all these finishes, then you get another boring decision. It didn't really light the crowd on fire. For Chris, this is now a two-fight winning streak, two decisions, if you ask me. And who could be next for him? I like to matchmake on the same cards. And when I look at, you know, Damon Blackshear could be an option, I'll say that. But there's also Malcolm Wellmaker. I mean, I don't know. Malcolm Wellmaker could give him a run for his money. You know, Chris can always hang with people in the rankings. He can flow between featherweight and bantamweight. So if he does want to stay at featherweight, Timmy Kwamba got a big win. Timmy Kwamba seems like the skill level that Chris Gutierrez has been fighting at. So we're going to stick with him at featherweight, taking on Timmy Kwamba. That's my prediction right there. As for John, it's tough to say. Two-fight losing streak now, both of them decisions. He's sitting at 4-4 in the UFC, so next fight should be make or break for him. And you could always do Roberto Romero if you want a matchmaker on the same card. Winner stays, loser goes. There's some expert matchmaking right there, but nothing too much to analyze with this one. Kind of same goes for the next contest. Evan Elder, Gage Young, more exciting than the last two, but nonetheless, three-round decision, nothing much to say. Short notice fight for the debuting Gage Young, who honestly, I actually missed this fight, so I have no idea if it's Gouge or Gage, but we're going to rock with it. But Evan Elder, just power in his punches. 115 significant strikes to 81, beats him up through three straight rounds. And to be fair, Gage hung in there. G-Money Young hung in there, but Evan Elder, he just hit harder. He looked really good here. Evan Elder looked really good. Probably the best fight he's had so far in the UFC. And by the way, he's had a fight of the night and a finish. But this one, it was just so crisp. It was so clean. Every punch he landed was thrown with efficiency. And I just think Young is a tough SOB. You know, I think Gage Young will be back, especially in the men's lightweight division, even if he wants to fight at featherweight. But he's 24. You know, he's from Missouri. I'm sure we can get him on a card in the future. I don't really know who. You know, there's a lot of unranked lightweights out there. So we'll just put him on the back burner. But Evan Elder, three straight wins, good one here. What to do with you? What to do with you in the men's lightweight division? Because if he wins one more, it'll be four straight wins. So there's some names like your Joel Alvarez, your Grant Dawsons, your Benoit Saint-Denis that are always kind of bigger names out there. But what if we give him a little Bobby Green, little Jim Miller? I like those types of names. Because if you could get past them, like Chase Hooper did, for example, like Jalen Turner did, for example, you can get good fights going there. And I kind of also hear Brad Riddell might be returning to the UFC. There's a fight right there. It'll be super fun. Brad Riddell, Evan Elder. I like Evan. I hope he sticks around. And you best bet we picked him. 28 years old. I mean, fantastic work. Fantastic work for Evan Elder. After that, we had our final prelim of the evening, Machnell, Jimmy Flick. And, you know, I picked Jimmy Flick and I honestly thought he was winning, but when they called Machnell's name, I wasn't too surprised. This fight is as straightforward as it's a grappler versus a striker. And by the way, Machnell isn't even that good of a striker yet. I mean, it's tough to give Jimmy Flick this fight. By the way, only landed 12 significant strikes. Machnell landed 35. Total strikes 88-48 in favor of Machnell. Takedowns 5 of 7 for 8.5 minutes for Jimmy Flick. So easily had to get Jimmy at least one round. You then have 4 minutes of control time for Machnell. Machnell throws up 3 submission attempts, also gets reversal. Jimmy Flick, 1 submission attempt, 1 reversal. And round one, I'll say Jimmy took. Round one, Jimmy took. He had 3 minutes, 41 seconds of control time. Had more significant strikes than Machnell. He took that round. Round two, Machnell, 18 significant strikes to 3. taken down once, landed a reversal. This one went to Matt Schnell. And it all came down to round three. And now, why I think they gave this to Matt Schnell is because he had two submission attempts. Neither landed, but, you know, nonetheless did that. Jimmy Flick landed one significant strike the entire round, only attempted five, all right, and got reversed on the ground. So Matt Schnell does enough to win. Does this do anything for Matt Schnell? It gets him in the win category. It gets him in the win category, and I cannot be happier for someone like Matt Schnell, honestly. He deserved it, 35 years old. He didn't retire, though, which kind of made me upset. For Jimmy Flick, I could straight up say, like, dude, this is now two straight losses. He's also 1-4 in his last five. Yeah, Jimmy Flick may have to go. So both these guys, you know, Matt Schnell's coming off a win. Jimmy Flick's coming off a loss here. I don't know if it changes where they're at in their careers at all. If you're asking me, they're going to be taking on your Loner Kavanaughs, your Andre Limas, these unranked guys who are hungry for a fight of some regard. Matt Schnell could always take on someone ranked. You know, if you want to give Kaya Sakura a pick-me-up fight, give him Matt Schnell. If you want to give Joshua Van a pick-me-up fight, if you want to give Bruno Silva a pick-me-up fight, those are the types of guys that you have them take on. So Matt Schnell, Jimmy Flick, you can do whatever you want with them. I'm not entirely invested with either of these guys, but, you know, it did kind of suck these prelims. Four straight finishes into four straight decisions. We were kind of heading to the main card, and we're like, all right, we need some action to pick us up. We truly do, and lo and behold, what's his freaking name? Ikram Alakasarov. I was thinking of Islam, and I just didn't want to say him. No, Ikram Alakasarov, he does it again, guys. He freaking does it again against Andre Munoz, and I'm not surprised. You know, not surprised, but I mean, still phenomenal work. Ikram Alakasarov, another round one knockout. Make it 7 career knockouts. Make it 12 career finishes and 13 career wins. And he's just so impressive. He is so impressive. 44 seven strikes to 16 with 6 seconds left. He's able to drop Munoz and get the knockout. Just great work. Just great work for Ikram. And like I said, this dude has now had 4 fights in the UFC, including Damas Kattar series. That's 5 under UFC banners. All of them have ended in round one. His lone losses are to Robert Whittaker and Amzat Chimaev. This guy's a stud. This guy's a stud. I already know that he had fights booked against Paulo Costa, but I think it's just so evident now he needs to take on someone like Paulo Costa. Maybe take on someone like Michel Pereira. All right, we're going to mention him in just a moment. But just those types of guys, I feel like Ikram Alakasarov can really hang with them. Now, as for Andre Munoz, 1-3 in his last 4. Tough loss here. I mean, pretty brutal loss. And mind you, we had already brought up how Andre Munoz has been knocked out in all of his losses. Here's another one for you. Here's another knockout loss for you. So I don't know what to do with him. He's 35. You could keep him around maybe to take on some random guy, but I don't know. We'll have to see. I was thinking that maybe Andre Munoz or Ikram Alakasarov could either take on the loser of Rainer Day Ritter and Bo Nickel coming up in about a week. So there's a matchup could do right there, but yeah, good stuff all around from Ikram Alakasarov. As for Andre, you know, you had promising times earlier in your career, but your time's done. It's Ikram Alakasarov's time. Then, guys, fight of the night. And I mean, just, I was not expecting Randy Brown and Nicholas Dalloway to be like that. I'm going to be honest. I did not think they were like that. But lo and behold, these two aging welterweight veterans went to war. Round one, they're going at it. It's physical. Randy Brown's landing more. Then, oh my gosh, Nicholas Dalloway has a ball. Nicholas Dalloway lands a knockdown. How is Randy Brown able to survive to round number two? Round number two. This is the best I've ever seen Randy Brown. This is the best I've ever seen Randy Brown. I mean, he was looking like prime Muhammad Ali in there. Oh my gosh. Him and Nicholas Dalby were trading. Brown was landing harder. Dalby has blood leaking everywhere. And then Brown catches him with the hook coming over and slumps him flat on the canvas. It was brutal. Randy Brown, fight of the night, knockout of the year contender. Excellent work from the rude boy, Randy Brown. So happy I picked him. So happy I picked Randy Brown. But look, guys, he is now 4-1 in his last 5. Only loss is a sketchy split decision to Brian Battle. Let's look at the bigger picture. 8-2 over his last 10. Those losses, Jack Del Maddalena and Brian Battle. So this dude's only been in the best of fights. This was probably the best he's looked in his career. And I think he's ready. I think he's ready for a ranked shot. And, you know, immediate matchup that came to mind for me was the winner of Vicente Luque and Kevin Holland. I think that's a very straightforward matchup you can make. But you can even do Wonderboy Thompson. Randy Brown versus Wonderboy Thompson, there's a fun matchup right there. You have Michael Morales and Gilbert Burns fighting, the loser of that. You have MVP, Michael Page is always looking for a fight to do. There are so many options. Jeff Neal, I mean, I would love to see him take on Jeff Neal. Didn't those two match up before? Maybe they have a fight. I have Jeff Neal versus Randy Brown, perfect fight right there. I absolutely love that. Let's continue up with this work, Randy Brown. This is phenomenal work. For Nicholas Dalby, two straight losses. I will say, next time he fights, he's either going to still be 40 or 41. Let's get him a retirement fight in Eastern Europe. All right, let's get him a retirement fight in London, for goodness sakes. Let's send Nicholas Dalby out with some momentum of some regard. Now, I don't know who he can take on in the men's welterweight division. But there's options. There really is options at welterweight. You know, I'll throw in Kevin Holland's name, maybe. That kind of seems like a foregone matchup from ever happening. But you even do Gunnar Nelson, Nicholas Dalby. Do it in London. I know they'll be back there at some point this year. I think that's a fight you should make. Gunnar Nelson, Nicholas Dalby. Let's book that one. Then the momentum died. Then the momentum sadly died. We get two great main card fights. And then, yeah, China didn't get better from here. Abus Magomedov, Michelle Pereira. Just nothing what we expected. You know, I know both these guys are good, but it's just another fight where it was clear Michelle Pereira is not just a one and done, like one round, like he's a 1 minute and done fighter so far in the UFC. And Abus, he also gassed out. So then you get into later rounds. Abus clearly could have finished Michelle Pereira, and he's gassed. And he just doesn't have what it takes. So we knew Abus would win. He was for some reason, the underdog. No idea that's true, but he gets it done. 78 significant strikes to 73 in favor of Abus. Abus goes 1-4 on takedowns. He gets a minute of control time. He outstruck Michelle in round one. He outstruck him in round two. And Michelle outstruck him in round two and three, which is very perplexing. But every single round went to Abus. Just the power, the technique, he looked overall better than Michelle Pereira. So Abus, after dropping losses to Sean Strickland and Kyle Barallo, he's now on a 3-fight winning streak. And you know what? He just beat the number 14 guy. Congratulations, Abus. You are ranked in the UFC. And I already saw people bringing up the name Rainer Day Ritter and the name Bo Nickel. If those are options for him to fight next, I would love that. You can also have him fight Paulo Costa. Heck, if you don't think he's ready, you can have him take on Ikram Alkhazarov. There are just unlimited options you can do with Abus Magomedov. Now, as for Michelle Pereira, you know, I think he's fighting someone unranked next. He's clearly just not ready for ranked competition. And if he's going to be starching unranked guys, feed me that. Feed me that. Truly, you know, Chris Curtis, I think would be a fun fight if Chris is fighting at middleweight still. Kelvin Gastelum, if he wants to fight at middleweight, that could be a fun fight. You know, Michelle Pereira, there's fun matchups to be made, but clearly his ceiling is Abus Magomedov and Anthony Anderson, which isn't too high of a ceiling. So this was supposed to be a fun fight. Everyone would have been surprised if it went the distance, and lo and behold, it did go the distance. Same for our next one, David Onama and Giga Chikadze. This one isn't going to win David any new fans. You know, David Onama isn't going to win any new fans on social media, but he is going to earn the number 12 spot in the men's featherweight rankings, and you gotta give him credit for that. You really do. This was a hard-fought win for him. It really was. Giga outstruck him 21-13 in round one. He landed a takedown, but just didn't do much with it. Round two, David outstrikes him on the feet. David lands a better takedown, gets control, does what he has to. David, same story in round number three, outstrikes him on the feet, lands a takedown, gets it done. David Onama outstrikes him 49-43, lands 3 of 3 takedowns for 6.5 minutes of control time. Yes, David Onama getting it done. Now, not as action-packed as some of his past few fights. You know, I could speak from that. The Roberto Romero, the Gabriel Santos, the Nate Landwehr, the Mason Jones fights, all action-packed. But this was tactical. This was David Onama going, okay, I have an opportunity to get a ranking. I'm not going to screw this up. I'm going to lock in as best as I can. And he did. And he did. So good stuff. He'll be ranked number 12 coming Tuesday. And as for what matchups are next for him, I suppose he could fight up, but we're always going to use the name Josh Emmett. I think that's a fantastic fight right there. I wouldn't even be mad if he took on a Calvin Kattar, a Dan Ige. You know, there's other options out there for him. As for Giga, I mean, he's definitely got to fight someone unranked. Now, you know what? There's two guys who are now coming off of losses who are going to be unranked. How about Giga Chikadze versus Bryce Mitchell? I would absolutely love that fight. Both guys in dire need of a win. There's a fight you can make right there. So Bryce Mitchell, Giga Chikadze. Let's do David Onama, Dan Ige. Those are my predictions for the next fights for all of those gentlemen. But like I said, kind of killed the momentum of UFC Kansas City. But then we checked back in for the co-main event. And I can't lie, it was bittersweet, but I did pick Zhang Mingyang, I think as everyone did. So it wasn't too much of a surprise. So it was pretty epic to watch him destroy Anthony Smith. But Anthony Smith just taking L after L here, you know. Zhang Mingyang runs through him 63 significant strikes to 10 in a 4-minute span. Anthony Smith doing, quite honestly, the most stereotypical Anthony Smith's thing ever. He shoots for a takedown. It's an awful attempt. It's a terrible single leg. Zhang Mingyang is just hammering down punches on him. He curls up in a ball, and basically, we're waiting around, and Jason Herzog is like, dude, he's given him so many opportunities to fight back, and he just can't get it done, and he stops the fight. Anthony Smith immediately looks up, and I don't know what was going on, but there was some fat guy in the crowd, I think, trolling him or talking to his family. Anthony Smith starts flicking him off. He starts going to leave the cage, and Zhang Mingyang is trying to hold him back, and Anthony Smith is just shrugging him off, and just such a terrible look for Anthony Smith. I can't even lie, so... A shocker. No shocker to me. No shocker to me. Anthony Smith leaves the UFC. 3-fight losing streak. TKO'd in round one. I mean, what would you expect? That's the only Anthony Smith way to go out. 38-22 is a professional record. Not too bad. That is a lot of losses, though. That is a lot of losses. But Anthony Smith gets retirement package. I did realize they didn't give Stipe one, but they decided to give Anthony Smith one. Perplexing. So Zhang Mingyang retires Anthony Smith in dominant fashion. Anthony Smith, enjoy retirement. And the UFC was doing everything in their power just to ensure Anthony Smith doesn't come back. But Zhang Mingyang will debut in the rankings at number 15, maybe even 14. And I'm excited for him. I'm excited for him. He's now 3-0 in the UFC. All of them 50K performance bonuses. All of them round one knockouts. He is now 19-5 professionally. 19-6, my bad. All 19 of those wins coming by finish. The dude's a problem. This dude's a big problem. I've been seeing a lot of names shipped around for his next matchup. Number 9 ranked Volkan Ozdemir. Love that. Number 10 ranked Nikita Krylov. That one's fun. I think the highest he could go is Alexander Rakic, but you're going to definitely see him take on someone in that, I'm going to say, 9 to 13 range next for Zhang Mingyang. He's fun. He's exciting, and I hope he's back for another fight before we know it, because, dude, he hits hard, and I know he can't speak English, but this is about, his jolliness after all his wins. I kind of like him. He's the Mountain Tiger. He's got a good nickname. Zhang Mingyang, exciting, as always. And then, ladies and gentlemen, behold it, we made it to our main event. I was excited. I think a lot of people, including myself, were excited. They thought this was going to be an electric main event. They thought it was going to be good. And if anything, it just really confirmed and basically solidified that Ian Garry is a good fighter. That's what it solidified. But Ian Garry is a good technical fighter. Let me tell you some other good technical fighters. You got Bilal Muhammad. You got Leon Edwards. You honestly have Israel Adesanya at times. You got Sean Strickland. And it was just boring. It was boring, and the crowd did not like Ian Garry. The crowd was not a fan of him. And, you know, honestly, for Carlos Prates, this was a big learning moment for him. It truly was. Ian Garry did everything he needed to win this fight. 126 significant strikes to 63, 4 of 19 on takedowns, so only 3 minutes control time. I do want to say that there's no real way for the judges to reward that when Carlos Prates is getting outstruck, but all the fans knew that Carlos Prates was way better of an anti-grappler than Ian Garry was a real grappler. So throughout the whole fight, I mean, Carlos only landed 7 in round 1, 12 in round 2, 10 in round 3, 12 in round 4, and then picked it up in round 5, but too little, too late. I think everyone kind of scored the same fight. Ian Garry won the first 3 rounds. Mind you, the most exciting stuff was really just Carlos Prates maybe tried to land a shot, and then round 4, Carlos picked it up, had some good moments against Ian Garry on the cage, and then round 5. I kid you not, we bring up when MMA seems rigged sometimes. It truly felt rigged here. I can't lie, watching Carlos Prates ground and pound Ian Garry, and then Ian Garry is literally in doggy position. You know doggy position? You know when you do what they call a girl push-up? Ian Garry is sitting like that, and Carlos Prates is just not throwing a punch. He's actually just staring at him, waiting for him to move. It looked like WWE, when guys are trying to get into position for a WWE move, and they're botching. That's honestly the vibe I got. Now, I honestly don't think MMA is rigged, but one thing I noticed after is there was a lot of bets for a lot of money that this would go 5 rounds. So I don't know if Carlos Prates got a cut. I don't want to be that guy that suggests that, because that's really not me. But I don't know. Ian Garry back in the win column. He's 16-1. He's ranked number 7, and he's the confirmed backup fighter for UFC 315. I guess that's okay. I mean, I'm sure anyone could care less if Sean Brady or Shafgat's the backup fighter because it doesn't really matter. But yeah, there you go, Ian Garry. Now, he was calling for a title shot off of this, and I hope he understands that Shafgat, Sean Brady are way more entitled to a title shot than him, but this still was nonetheless a very good win for him. So what is actually next for Ian Garry now? There's a couple options. We could go for the Shafgat gets the winner of Bilal and JDM, and he has to fight Sean Brady, or what I think is the most reasonable, Leon Edwards in Ireland or London. Leon Edwards versus Ian Garry, the last proving test for Ian Garry and potentially last fight of Leon Edwards' MMA career. I think that's the fight you do. I really think that's the fight you do. And if Ian Garry can get past Leon Edwards, he'll gain a lot more respect. Look at Sean Brady. Everyone thinks Sean Brady's a killer now. And mind you, this was a guy getting TKO'd by Bilal Muhammad. That's what Ian Garry needs. Because right now, you know, he tiptoes between being respectful and being the bad guy. You know, you got to be like Colby Covington. Colby Covington is just always the bad guy. Even in defeat, he never admits he lost. For Ian Garry, you know, he's showing respect as the crowd's booing. He's saying, like, hey, I'm the top guy. And he didn't do much in the fight. He had one good moment where he had some nice combos. And that's all the highlight you can get from that fight. So, Ian Garry, we'll see what's next for you. But clearly not a title shot. But I guess he's the backup, so good for him. As for sweet Carlos, this does end the Fighting Nerd's undefeated streak in the UFC. They're now 19-1. This ends Carlos Prates' 11-fight winning streak. But to be fair, I mean, dropping a 5-rounder to Ian Garry, where the one takeaway people are getting for this is how he was the one like ending this fight with the biggest shots, I don't think is too bad. Now, what's next for Carlos Prates? I don't want to take him like fully out of the rankings, but I don't really know what he can do. So there's always winner of Vicente Luque, Kevin Holland. We threw that around earlier. There's Michael Page MVP, or there you could even give him Randy Brown. Or you could give him Renat Fakhradinov. Or you could give him any single freaking welterweight on the planet. Santiago Ponzinibbio, for all I care. Carlos Prates is going to come back. He's going to be more exciting. There is always this fight in a guy's career where they're just beaten by someone. And they don't necessarily get finished. They don't necessarily come out looking awful. But they just come out and you know that they lost. You know that they lost. And that's what happened for Carlos Prates here. So I think he'll be back. I know he'll be back. We just got to wait and see. So unfortunately, Carlos Prates has been humbled. I would like Ian Garry to be humbled, though. I kind of don't like Ian Garry anymore. I can't even lie. I've rocked with him a lot, but the Shafgat fight, this fight, no real interest in him. So that was how UFC Kansas City ended. Kind of a lackluster main event, you know. And when I look overall at the exciting fights versus unexciting fights, I mean, there were 14 fights on this card, and it was truly 7-7, split 7-7. This was a 50-50 card. Main event was kind of a doozy, but overall, not too bad. I've seen much worse, and by the way, we have to watch Apex cards sometimes, so that's how it'll be. Next time we do discuss MMA, it will be our UFC Des Moines predictions. We got a lot of fun fights coming to you from Iowa. I mean, Thomas Peterson, he's a Minnesota boy, a little heavyweight fight against Dontel Mays for him. Gaston Balanos is back against Kwong Lee. He's from Minnesota. Marina Rodriguez and Jillian Robertson, which is the fourth fight from the prelims. I mean, that's ridiculous. Ryan Loader, Azamat Bekimov, that's an underrated middleweight fight down there. Ranked women's bantamweight action, Yana Santos and Misha Tate. The return of Jeremy Stevens, taking on the return of Mason Jones. That's a dogfight right there. Cameron Smotherman and Sergey Sadeh look to remain in the bantamweight division. Montel Jackson versus the undefeated Daniel Marcos. Are you kidding me? Age veteran Santiago Ponzinibbio and Daniel Rodriguez. Maybe they'll give us a sneaky banger. And then your two-piece at the top, Rainer Day Ritter, Bo Nickel, Corey Sandhagen, and Devs Figueiredo. You can't make that much better coming to you from Iowa. Honestly, they worked with what they had to, and I think they're going to deliver us a fantastic card. So I am excited for that. But that's all I got, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I have for UFC Kansas City. Now, do I think that the Malcolm Wellmaker or Randy Brown knockouts were KO of the year? No, but they're definitely in the top 10. That's for certain. I still remember that Abdulrazak Alassane and Cesar Almeida knockout. I also think that Nazem Imavov over Asanya is good, but as of right now, Mauricio Rufi spinning head kick over Bobby Green still has got to be taking the cake for me for knockout of the year. And as for fight of the year, it's going to remain Merab versus Umar, and I think it's going to remain like that for quite a bit. But yeah, keep some names out. Keep your ears open for some names from this card. Certainly Ikram Alkhasarov, Malcolm Wellmaker, Devon Blackshear, Randy Brown, Abus Magomedov, David Onama, Zhang Mingyang. There's a lot of guys that are going to be moving up in the UFC. So, with that, I will bid you all adieu, guys. Have an amazing week. Just make it the best week ever. Live spontaneous. Do something you never would do normally. That's how I kind of like to live my life. Just being spontaneous, taking opportunities, just trying to be as positive and upbeat as ever. And as always, you know what? I'm going to end it just like that. Positive and upbeat. That's how you end an episode like this. Guys, have a good one. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.